Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever games, movies, and TV is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show.
Welcome to Roguecast, episode 230. It is freezing.
Yes, it is literally chilly in the room in which we record this.
And it's cold outside, and I don't like it.
Yep, it's awesome. I want to go on a hobbit adventure and destroy Sauron.
Why don't you go on a hobbit adventure and turn the heat back up?
I did turn the heat up a little while ago. It should be warming up temporarily.
No, I mean outside.
The world is definitely doing that on its own. Just you wait, Randy. Just you wait.
We're going to get so much cold because everything else has gone to hell.
Did I just wish for global warming?
Yes, you did.
Yes, you did.
That's my issue. The winters are colder, summers are warmer, nobody's happy.
Yeah.
We should do something about it.
What you want, your ideal apocalyptic future would probably be more on the Road Warrior side.
More Mad Max, yes.
And I guess mine would be Snowpiercer.
God.
Neither
of those are very happy.
Actually, mine is the day after tomorrow, tidal waves with some freezing.
Yeah. Sorry, Nick, it's a binary system. You either love extreme cold or
Nick
extreme heat.
Nick gets Snowpiercer.
Yeah, Snowpiercer.
Yeah, I would choose Snowpiercer, I guess. I just don't want to be
I love the cold.
I don't want to be on the back of the train, though.
Well, it's that or you're on the front of a car like a Road Warrior Gimp.
That's true.
Mad Max
was. Binary system, I guess.
Yeah. You're on the back of the train or the front of a dune buggy.
Yep. Hang on a second. Because that's almost certainly going to be the title of the episode. Alright, so store news. We've got Halloween Comic Fest coming up in a couple weeks. Free comics, we'll have more details on that. We have an Illuminati secret meeting going on Saturday, November 3rd. Now,
the game?
Yes. That's what that means. The card game.
Beyonce going to be there in her lizard form?
Yes. Beyonce is always with us in her lizard form. Which, by the way,
I did see a gecko in the store the other day.
And
I said, Queen Bee, yas.
It's going to be that kind of podcast, folks. The Illuminati secret meeting is Saturday, November 3rd, and it's basically a chance to come out and play their sort of conspiracy card game, which is sort of lampooning conspiracies and...
Yep. Is this an updated version of it?
It is an updated version. In fact, I believe one of the cards is fake news.
My brother played the hell out of the original one back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
It was like early 80s. I don't know if... For all I know, it came out late 70s.
It was 80s. Because okay. I played it too.
Yeah.
It was in one of those little plastic boxes like Car Wars. And, making a little structure of who controlled who was always fun.
Yeah, it's a sort of rival backstabbing conspiracies, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember they used to have, what was it? Like, what's the Gnomes one?
Gnomes of Zurich.
Gnomes of Zurich. There was,
The basic Illuminati.
Right.
There was the UFOs of some kind.
Right.
Yeah, all these...
There are all sorts of new factions to be had because the world has only gotten crazier.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it'll be fun, and we may have some giveaway stuff, and I believe there'll be a kit for that. So, all right, moving on to news. The unofficial news of this week, the theme of this week's news is, wait, what? Because there's some crazy-ass news.
Could the unofficial gif of it be that dude blinking?
Yeah.
What?
Yes. So let's start with the Secret Six pilot at CBS. This isn't the craziest news. Secret Six is a fun idea to do a TV show. The crazy thing is Gail Simone had heard nothing about it until we did.
Until she got inundated with, posts on
Facebook.
Yeah,
congratulations! She's like, thanks, I have nothing to do with this.
Right. For those who don't know, Gail Simone probably wrote the most prominent recent version of The Secret Six, a DC comic that extends back, what, to the 60s?
Mm-hmm.
I forget what the deal was with the original team, but in her hands, it had become kind of an offbeat villain team, right?
Yeah. A little Suicide Squad-y.
Yeah. They kind of... I don't know how they chose what they did. Like, did they get missions?
They were mercenaries.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They banded together because
So unlike sort of being Dirty Dozen guys working for the government, they were doing their own thing.
Yeah.
Think
Superpowered Ocean's 11.
Okay.
No, the conceit of it originally was during one of the crises.
Yeah.
All the villains got together and were trying to muscle everybody into joining their one team. These people decided they didn't want to do that.
They were not joiners. They didn't want to be part of the syndicate.
So this was an anti-union piece, what I get.
They are against unions.
And they were their secret leader was codenamed Mockingbird, and it turned out to be Lex Luthor. Lex Luthor, I'm not sure it was the Lex Luthor.
But yeah, they were basically all the oddball villains who weren't going to join up.
Yep.
They were the Rage Against the Machines, I Won't Do What You Tell Me villains.
But in like Gail Simone's hands, I mean, she basically gave us the best new version of Catman.
Yeah, her Catman was great.
And
she liked to take a lot of Z-listers and weirdos and make them kind of cool or interesting.
Ragdoll was...
Ragdoll was really good. Superboy's Knockout. The poorly named Scandal Savage, which was Vandal Savage's daughter.
Yep.
Which, you know, some people love them, their puns. And that's not even a pun, it's just a weird rhyming.
I feel like Peter David did it, but he probably didn't.
It was Gale, but it felt like a Peter David thing.
Yep.
Anyway, we don't know what version of Secret Six they're going to do. It makes me a little nervous that Gail's not at all involved because she was the one who knew how to make this work. But
yeah.
I don't know.
And it also, that seems like an idea that could be fun.
Yeah.
A bunch of, it's not, like you said, not unlike Suicide Squad, but the dynamics were different and it was more like a dysfunctional family,
yeah.
I felt like.
Yeah.
And you said this is on CBS?
It's on CBS. So I look forward to the one season before it moves over to CW.
Or that, or I was actually expecting for like CBS All Access or something.
No, it says it's being developed at CBS.
Is it possible that could still end up at CBS All Access, or does that mean definitely?
I mean, anything is possible. 2018 is weird as hell.
Yeah,
because like a Secret Six book doesn't.
If they pushed
it
into a PG, if they push it into a PG-13 or R area, you know, Star Trek Discovery has pushed its rating a little bit. If they did that with that, it could give it a little bit of the extra oomph to be something else.
Yeah,
but. It may be the other Secret Six that has nothing to do with the villain team, right?
Yeah.
So here is the pitch. It is being developed by Rick Mariguay? Rick Mogwai. Who did Suits, which is not a great.
That was that
resume.
USA thing.
Yep. He is executive producing and writing. Proposed show follows six morally ambiguous strangers, each with their own unique specialties and secret pasts, assembled by someone unknown to them who proceeds to blackmail them into targeting corrupt politicians and corporations. So it sounds almost like they're taking the Gail Simone pitch and making it into Leverage.
Yeah.
Right, again, that's kind of removing the superhero from the...
Maybe? I don't know.
Well, it'd be a little bit like saying, like, we're going to do a series called The Suicide Squad. It's about a bunch of regular oddball prisoners who have to work for the government to lose time off their sentence. And you drop all the super villain and stuff.
If you told me John Rogers was doing this...
No, I'd be all about it. We're developing a show called Suicide Squad. Is it about a team of six people who keep trying to kill themselves?
Rick Mogwai? I don't know.
Yeah, Rick Mogwai I'm not so sure about. Jack Bannon has been cast as Alfred Pennyworth in the Gotham prequel, Pennyworth. And I know you're thinking, why on the hell are they doing a prequel to Gotham?
Well, is this a prequel to Gotham? I thought this was a thing.
Okay.
Because it's on Epix.
It's on Epix, which is... I don't know what Epix is.
I don't know either.
So we don't know if it's a prequel to Gotham?
It is actually not. It's...
Okay.
Yeah, it's literally about...
They're just like, let's do another Batman prequel somewhere else.
But
and
it's
this
about
is
a young Alfred Pennyworth as an SAS guy and working for Thomas Wayne, I believe.
Gotham showrunner Bruno Heller has found the lead for his other Batman prequel.
Oh.
So... They're comparing it to Gotham. So basically, the dude did Gotham.
Yeah.
And he's doing an Alfred who's based on his SAS former SAS Gotham guy. So it's not in continuity with Gotham, but it clearly is the same thing.
So Alfred on the show is one of the more entertaining characters.
Yeah.
I think the most interesting version I've seen of sort of tough Alfred. I like him, say, over the Batman Earth 1 version that Johns did.
I hated that one.
But he is a tough, hard-ass British guy who's clearly would be part of Bruce's training and not just some guy who dusts his shit. But what I'm trying to think is, I'm just...
Okay, let me...
You got some more?
Let me give you the pitch.
Okay, go ahead.
Because actually the pitch is not bad. Jack Bannon, who's from The Imitation Game and Ripper Street, will play a young Alfred Pennyworth in the upcoming drama about the former British SAS soldier who forms a security company in 1960s London and goes to work with Thomas Wayne, who's not yet the father of Bruce Wayne. He's described as boyishly handsome, cheerful, charming, clever young man from London, honest, open-faced, and witty. People would never take him for an SAS killer. Alfred doesn't know how to reconcile the kind-hearted boy he used to be with the cold, calculated killer he was forced to become.
You know that scene in Galaxy Quest where they're like, give him a hand, he's British?
Yeah.
I feel like a story about an ex-SAS guy, parlaying his skills and who doesn't look like it. That seems okay.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why you bother to connect it with Batman unless you're going to play with the Batman world, but you could.
What if I were to tell you it's by the people who made the Bonkers Insane Gotham, and it's going to be by the MGM pro-owned premium cable network Epix that nobody has?
It's like British Tom Clancy. I mean, that's
so let's see. So here's what I'm thinking. Like, so Gotham, they've snuck in, they've prequeled a ton of villains, you know, and had ways of them showing up. Like, even though Poison Ivy was a little kid when she showed up, somehow she got grown up into adult and became Poison Ivy, right?
Yep.
Bane is going to be around. Mr. Freeze is around. I never liked the idea that Batman showed up and all the criminals came with him. So I do feel like some of them should be kind of starting to emerge in some version before he shows. That's fine. I'm trying to think, what weird villains would they pick have they not used? Or maybe they can use some of the same ones.
Conrad King?
I don't know. is it going to be set in England?
The 60s.
Is it Britain?
No, it's in Gotham.
Okay. Because I feel like you can kind of do what worked with Gotham or versions of that. But I do feel like it needs to be somewhat heightened. You know, like, there's legacy characters like Ra's al Ghul and the Court of Owls that can have plants in any era.
Sure.
I
mean, I could see them doing that in
League of
Assassins.
You could even have, right, Vandal Savage could play some role.
My issue
is... The Secret Six could be in there.
My issue is that Thomas Wayne, the more you make Thomas Wayne special and have all this Batman-y things,
yeah,
the more weird is that Bruce became Batman. It's...
Right.
Like, you don't want to... It's like making Peter Parker's parents Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right.
Which I always liked, but I admit is dumb.
Yes. Right. He needs to be kind of a normal kid who becomes the special
yes.
one. It's a little bit weird if you're... It's a little too close to, like, well, my family was royalty, and it turns out I'm royalty too.
Yeah.
Well, Gotham is already bonkers. I guess it makes sense that its sister show is bonkers too.
Yeah.
What seems weirdest about this is sister show on another network.
Yeah.
And also sister show where, like, Gotham has mined a lot of obscure villain territory
oh, yeah.
and stuff already. Like, I don't know what they're doing. And they already have a kind of entertaining Alfred.
Well, this is that Alfred, clearly. I mean...
Right. But he'll be on another network.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
So they won't... like, I would actually almost prefer it was on... CBS?
Fox.
Or Fox. On Fox, and they just made it a prequel to Gotham.
Yeah.
And go ahead and, you know, whatever seeds that they've got there, they could, like, flashback a few decades and have it percolating or something like that. But
yeah.
It's weird.
It's weird.
What's our thing for the day?
Wait, what?
Wait, what? Yes, that's precisely my reaction.
Iron Fist is not getting a season 3.
Right.
This isn't super weird, but what's interesting is that...
Well, I saw all the articles said it was canceled or whatever.
Yeah. If they had announced this, it wasn't getting a season 2,
yeah.
no one would have cared.
Yeah.
Everyone was like, ah, what a disappointing... But apparently everybody liked, or a lot of people liked season 2 better.
Right.
I didn't. I didn't find anything to like in that first couple episodes and didn't give it any more chance. But now they canceled it and people
but
like...
some people with lower standards
people
liked
are like,
it.
Oh, I was looking forward to season 3 now.
Yeah.
Like, well... Way to pick the wrong time to end your franchise.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this doesn't preclude them from having, like, Power Man and Iron Fist.
Or more Defender stuff.
Yeah, but I don't think they're going to do that.
They're not doing that either.
Yeah.
I don't... Yeah. And people have also speculated that maybe they're doing for the Disney streaming.
And they're going to recast
And they're going to recast Iron Fist. That'd be best.
What if he just hung out... What if instead of Power Man and Iron Fist, it's Iron Fist and Jessica Jones?
What if it's Power Man and Daredevil?
What if it's Night Nurse and Jessica Jones and Foggy?
Okay, yeah. Those might be some of the best characters in it. So.
Yep, it's on.
We got an Aladdin teaser trailer, which is just a little teaser. There's not much to it. But I did see Iago.
Yep.
We did see the Cave of Wonders.
Yep.
We got our first glance at our Aladdin, who looks good. And it's directed by Guy Ritchie.
You may know from making most other Disney movies ever and a lot of all-ages features.
So weird.
Wait, no.
No.
He made a bunch of gangster movies.
Yeah. He made Man from U.N.C.L.E. He made the couple Sherlock Holmes movies.
Yeah.
Robert Downey Jr.
But Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels and Snatch, right?
And Snatch, yeah.
Yep.
Those are his big kind of
It is a weird,
indie crime movies.
I mean, he did do that awful King Arthur project, but to suddenly for him...
He can never be forgiven for that.
No,
for him
that was
to be
awful.
Doing the mainstream Disney Aladdin is weird. I hadn't realized he was doing it.
It doesn't seem super weird. You know, I've seen, like, they started getting sort of, like, more serious directors for the Harry Potter movies. We've seen that kind of
I'm
stuff
I'm trying
before.
To remember the directors that they've gotten for
Martin
the other
Scorsese
live
directed a kid's movie.
And it was a great Hugo.
Yeah.
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 What other, like, live-action Disney... They got, like, Jon Favreau to do...
Jungle Book. And that was great. But
they got Kenneth Branagh to do Cinderella.
Remember, Jon Favreau also had done...
Elf.
Zathura.
Zathura,
yeah.
I liked Zathura.
And did
quite
he do the original Jumanji?
No.
No, he did Zathura,
yeah,
which was Space Jumanji.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
AKA Jumanji in Space.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, I am... You know, every once in a while, every time there's like a Disney movie announcement, like a live action one, I kind of like looking a little bit at like some of the message board threads. I get the vibe that there's essentially two camps. There's the dedicated Disneyites who are kind of excited to see anything Disney.
Yep.
And then there's people who are like, ugh, this didn't need a remake. And like, I'm kind of somewhere in between there. Like, I don't think these needed a remake, but they usually change them up enough that there's something interesting kind of at work.
So you're saying there's three camps?
There's a hidden subversive camp. It's
I'm
true.
In the hidden subversive camp with you.
Yeah. I'm kind of neither here nor there on this. Like, it could be good.
I might see it. I really like Jungle Book. I haven't seen any of the others.
I did try and watch Beauty and the Beast, and it did not take for me.
I know. We have some people who really enjoy it.
Yeah, I actually like the Beauty and the Beast one.
Also, they're doing a Lilo and Stitch live action. I saw people basically in general being like, no, don't do this. And I'm like, if it's good, I'll watch it. I love Lilo and Stitch. Yeah. I can see a version of that that's fun.
Yeah.
Yep.
But again...
it is going to be funny, though. Like, you know how like everything kind of becomes more extreme over time?
Yeah.
Like in 30 years, people will be like, you know, maybe I should have piped up when they were doing all those live action versions. And now that there's been a claymation version and a puppet version of all of them and a porn version of all of them.
There's already been a porn version.
In a virtual world that I inhabit, because that's happening in the next five years.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Anyway,
you're gonna Ready Player One the shit out of
yes.
Yeah. Well, we all can't live in our climate change world, so we'll live in our porn little, VR Disney movies.
What do they call the virtual world in Ready Player One?
Oasis.
The Oasis. Yeah.
We'll all live in the Oasis.
Yep. It's gonna be great.
All right. And have sex with Lion Kings.
I'm just gonna play original Donkey Kong, exactly as it is, but three dimensional and realistic.
You're in a CGI. Over and over. You're just in a CGI arcade where you're playing Donkey Kong.
Yes, that's right. That's right. All I've done is recreate it.
All right. Next up on the parade of Wait What News, Kraven the Hunter screenwriter Richard Wenk claims that Sergei Krabanoff will come face to face with Spider-Man. So there's a few weird things about this.
Very unlike the Venom movie that it was Spider-Man-less.
The first weird thing is that there is a man who can claim that his job is writing a Kraven the Hunter screenplay.
Right.
And he's not crazy.
No, because Sony wants to do a million Spider-Man movies that don't have Spider-Man.
Basically, he is claiming that Spider-Man is going to be in a screenplay, and I'm like, I bet there's no way Marvel's going to let them put Spider-Man in this movie.
Why do we think that is? They're just protective of the property?
Because Sony fucked up everything. I mean, I get that Venom's been very successful, but...
Doesn't Spider-Man only have one more movie, and then contractual obligation that Sony and Marvel?
I hadn't considered that maybe the Venom success might mean Spider-Man might not get renegotiated. That sucks.
They're not gonna... I would imagine they are not gonna renegotiate.
If we lose Spidey out of the MCU and Cap, I can't take it. My heart can only take so much.
By the way, I don't take any special joy in it, but I did predict that Venom would be a successful movie, or at least moderately successful. Yeah.
I don't think anyone at this table has seen it.
That's great. Yeah. You want to predict Trump will get reelected too?
Maybe I'll do that. Trump Venom.
Venom 2. Venom 2020. Venom lost in New York City.
You know, Venom has a history of turning on allies and destroying them. I can get behind this.
You're just playing the long con?
Yes, that's right.
Just hope he just eats his
brain. You know how, like, Trump is always like, I've got a very, very great brain, a lot of brain power.
And Venom's always talking about eating brains?
He's always talking about it.
True.
Always has
point.
The best words.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a match made in hell. Anyway, Kraven, they're talking about how they want to do the Kraven's Last Hunt story. Or, like, they're looking at
it. They wanted to inform, I believe, the story.
The weird thing
is,
that's a good last Kraven story.
Well, it is, but it's a story I think you could tell without the finality of it. At the same time, I think it would probably be most potent if it did, but it would be weird as a movie because, in a way, it's kind of... He's almost successful, essentially, in it.
Yeah.
I don't know how spoilery we want to be on a story that's, like, 20 or 30 years old. How spoiler do we want to be?
Kraven does not make it out of Kraven's Last Hunt.
Right.
It's called Kraven's Last Hunt.
Right, but there's a lot of things that have last in it that aren't the last.
Yeah.
he essentially kind of...
Last Samurai? Last Jedi?
Yeah.
Both times? Yeah. Totally.
That was it?
There was no more Jedi after that.
If memory serves, essentially Kraven tags Spider-Man with with something that simulates death. He is buried. Everybody mourns him. It's a small story, though. You don't, like, see other superheroes doing that. It's more about MJ and stuff like that.
Right.
And then he puts on the costume. He goes out to the streets in his own kind of messed up way.
Yeah.
He feels that he's better than Spider-Man. Like, one of the threats that Spider-Man couldn't beat, he brutally beats. And he feels like he's successful. And he goes home and he puts a gun in his mouth, and that's the end of Kraven, right?
Yeah. So Kraven is not a great. Kraven is not a guy who takes victory well. Is what we're hearing.
He got everything he wanted. They delved into his background. Like,
some
as
some people go to Disney World, some people put a gun in their mouth.
They got into his Russian history, which, you know, yep. Was something that had never really been much explored, and they made him a much more serious character in this. It's weird to me to there's like kind of the fun kind of sleazy hunter Kraven, which yep. is like what Stan Lee created, and then there was this serious take on him that was a good final story for him. I think almost everybody liked the story, right?
Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah, it was one of those ones that's like disturbing.
Yep.
There's things where he's like in a cage and like 1,000 spiders descend on it and he starts eating them all.
It's a little weird.
He's like doing shamanic kind of I will devour your soul kind of stuff, and it's disturbing. There's a lot of disturbing stuff in it.
Yep.
I don't really think I would want to see it as a movie. I think I would want to see... here's what I imagine them doing. They do one that's more like the sleazy hunter guy, but somewhere in it, his arc is that he kind of discovers true honor or decides he needs to do something to return to his honor, and that's what the arc is.
Yeah.
And that might even be with him dying in the end. But it'll play. I bet it plays out as differently as Civil War did on the big screen from the comic.
Anyway, I am not excited by the notion of Spider-Man having been so finally redeemed.
As always, there's about 1,000 ways it could go wrong.
And I think it's likely they won't just do it. But yeah. The thought that there's anyone at Sony who is like, yeah, the Spider-Man they did we've done with Marvel, Homecoming was really successful, and then they really built him up in Civil War and Infinity War. Let's face him off against Kraven in a Kraven solo movie. Like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah. Yep, it's time to let Spider-Man shine. Not probably have him defeated by Kraven, who then eats a gun.
One last bit of news. Scarlett Johansson apparently is getting $15 million if they make that Black Widow movie. I still think this is not going to happen. But that's one step closer. And they have a director, right?
Yeah, they have a director. They have a screenwriter. They've got...
It's further along the process than a Kraven the Hunter movie.
I feel like this one's going
to
happen.
I would like them to make that movie. I just don't know they're going to.
Let's say it happened. Who would you like to be the threat, Randy, if assuming it was done well?
I don't know. I kind of want it to be about her past in the Red... Like, I want some threat from the Red Room to come back. So she has to go back to Russia, do kind of spy stuff. Like, I would like it to be a... Atomic Blonde is very close to what I want for a Black Widow movie.
I want more heightened stuff. I need some superheroes in there. I want it to be a version of like the Soviet super soldiers.
Well, Crimson Dynamo could be in there.
I know, but I'd rather have the Soviet super soldiers because they're more weird and varied. I don't know if they could work them into the Marvel Universe easily yet.
You want Ursa Major?
Yep. I want Ursa Major, Darkstar, Vanguard, and whoever the other dude is.
I think that's going to be weirder. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'd be on board it. But I also think the Winter Soldier should be in it. I would like to see them finally reveal... The Scarlet Witch, the Winter Soldier, Black Widow history that's been hinted at in every movie they've been together in.
Yep.
I think that would be that potent sort of material for them to mine if they did it. But I guess we'll see.
I have faith in them to do it right. All right, one last bit of wait what news, and then we'll get to the actual news that is pretty good. There's a new D&D. They're saying it's not an eSport, but sure as hell sounds like an eSport. It's called D&D Sports. It's the first online D&D tournament in a cooperative party-versus-party setting from Encounter Roleplay and D&D Beyond with a grand prize of $5,000.
It's interesting. They say cooperative, but it's clearly a versus thing.
Yeah.
But I guess it's a cooperative in the sense that you have a team and they have a team.
So we've been working closely with over a dozen talented DMs to create 15 pre-gen characters, which players will choose, and adapt the pre-existing D&D 5 edition rules. Basically, over the course of 4 weeks, 16 players will compete in teams of 4 in single elimination games. Each game is a best-of-three arena battle played via Roll20. It's called Team Beholder versus Team Mind Flayer, Team Kobold, Team Duras, but they're not those creatures. That's just the name they've picked.
Right. Just some fearsome D&D monsters.
And then there's a
I have a
finals.
Certain kind of... I don't want to say morbid curiosity, but I'd be curious to see how somebody would play it competitively because, you know, like, the reason that people... I play D&D It's not, like, the things I don't like are how, like, structured combat is. You know, it's basically a video game if you play it only by those rules. I would want to sometimes try something different, but they have, like, very set rules for unarmed combat and for, you know, you will have, like, a much more limited choice if you're not doing the role-playing game, if you're just doing the raw combat.
So,
and I would be kind of curious to see what tactics they use based on, because they're going to be forced to, like, draft pre-generated characters.
Yeah.
At the same time, there's a part of me in this that thinks it's the worst thing ever, because it's going to get people thinking that D&D is not a role-playing game, but a game that bros bet on
that
to see who's
win.
The toughest.
Yeah, D&D should not be a game you... I've already seen a little bit of this in Adventurers League that occasionally bothers me, that, like, people are playing and, like, they want to play to get whatever the gear is for the end of the session, and I'm like, the fun of D&D is you play D&D.
Right, you get to inhabit a character and have an adventure story.
But what about
story.
That 7th level magic item that no one else will have?
Yeah, see, that does not appeal
that's
to me.
That's bragging rights sports kind
that's
of
that's not
stuff.
How I like to play D&D. And do whatever you want, that's fine, I understand what people... But it makes me nervous to see D&D turned into that.
Right,
so,
I would...
Yeah.
If this happens to take off... do we think... Is the kind of thing that's people be easy to bet on and stuff like that?
Oh, probably. Yeah.
It would be a shame if it, you know, as it is, people, D&D occupies a sort of nebulous place, I think, in the mind of the average person who has not played it or doesn't really know sort of nerdy stuff. But I feel like its reputation has been on the rise. It had to get out of the, it's satanic version of stuff in the 80s. It's still getting out of that in some places.
Yep.
But there's enough popularity in shows and podcasts and all that stuff that it's I think it's built up a solid little reputation now, kind of on as a cult but cool thing.
Yep.
If it starts becoming a property that basically functions like sports, where people are just trying to, like, figure out who the most powerful characters are and the best way to stat something, that would make my heart sad.
Me too.
And then I would have to destroy them with my +5 Holy Avenger.
Okay, on to the last couple bits of news. Ryan Coogler has officially signed on to write and direct Black Panther 2.
Big stuff.
I
wish he was... actually wish more that he was doing it with Creed 2, but there you go.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Not me. I don't care what happens to Creed 2 as long as I get Black Panther 2. And I like Creed, but...
Yeah. Creed was a better movie than Black Panther, for sure.
You're a crazy person.
I still don't watch Creed.
It's a better movie than Black Panther.
No, it's not.
It has a lot less cheesy CG.
Has a lot more boxing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, Creed is not better than Black Panther. Dave's a crazy person.
Uh-huh. Randy likes anything if you stuff it in tights.
Accurate. No, I wasn't sure he was going to return, and I'm glad that he is. So, I would, in an ideal world, I would like him to be doing Creed 2 and Black Panther 2. Actually, in an ideal world, I don't think I want a Creed 2.
Yeah, there is some truth to that. The trailers I've seen, the fact that he's not directing it has actually almost killed my interest in it, because I think he was a big part of why I liked that movie so much. He and Michael B. Jordan, they got that part of the equation back.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Michael G. Borden.
Michael G. Borden, yeah.
Wait for the inevitable Creed 3 and Creed 4.
I actually don't see any particular reason why they would not try and kind of continue the franchise.
The weird thing to me is, like...
Although I can see them sort of handing it off more freely to other characters in there.
Black Panther is a series that... I think this is why I want him on Black Panther more than I want him on Creed, is because Creed was a finished story. It did not need any further.
Right.
Black Panther is a story set in the Marvel Universe. There's lots more story to tell with those characters. So I'd much rather see a sequel to that than I would like to see a sequel to Creed. So,
I understand your thoughts on the matter.
And not particularly Dave's thoughts.
Yeah.
All right. Last thing, there's a trailer for BBC's new Little Drummer Girl, which is John Le Carré from the producers of...
Night Manager,
which is... Night Manager was a very successful 6-episode miniseries, I think.
Yeah, it was.
Where it was Hugh Laurie playing this sort of evil weapons dealer, Tom Hiddleston playing this... manager of a hotel in, I think, Algeria, something like that.
Yeah, it was.
Who basically gets drawn into infiltrating this guy's organization. So it was like old school spies. And
yeah.
It was very harrowing and entertaining and just great, great acting. Really, really well done.
But it is, as a counterpoint, it is very methodically paced.
Yeah.
It's not
that's all
like,
John Le Carré stuff.
Yeah, as all John Le Carré.
I've actually never really seriously watched any of his stuff, any version ever.
Yeah, I've not really.
Not even Tinker Terror, Soldier Spy.
It was floating around when I was a kid, but it was too boring for Teen Dave, and I never just got around to it since.
I really like Night Manager, so I'm looking forward to this Little Drummer Girl. The trailer is solid. It's not like amazing, but good cast. Michael Shannon, Alexander Skarsgård.
Does it link up with pre-existing stuff? Are all his kind of shared spy-averse?
No, there's all spies.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's a girl. This time it's a woman who's been recruited to be a spy. Seems like the similar thing of, like, what does it do to you when you go undercover kind of thing.
Right.
So,
do we think that she'll end up fighting the Soviet super soldiers?
Probably,
or?
Yeah. Probably.
Oh, cool. I'll try and catch it.
And Creed. All right. That's it for news. We'll be back in just a second with comics for the week.
One familiar cry.
We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, October 17th. And I don't have anything to say about this week. Nothing particular. Let's just launch into it.
Should do it first. What do you got, Randy?
I am going to talk about a book that I loved and never expected to see back, which is The Unstoppable Wasp. This is written by Jeremy Whitley. He did, I want to say, 8, maybe 10 issues. And it was a book I really, really enjoyed that never sold. It is about Nadia, the new Wasp, who is Hank Pym's daughter. She basically came around after he had died or been turned into Ultron or whatever happened to him. And so she thinks, she basically comes into the Avengers. She was trained in the Red Room, so she's got sort of like espionage training. And she's also sort of this sort of somewhat naive about American culture, very enthusiastic, but also like a super genius. And in her previous series, she created this thing called GIRL, Genius in Action Research Labs, where she would go and recruit young women with the talent for science and was basically creating her sort of science labs for young women. And it was really good. It was a great setup. And then it got canceled. Well, Marvel picked up on the fact that this is actually a great all-ages concept. And they're retooling it as kind of an all-ages book. It is still sort of in Marvel continuity, but definitely aimed a little younger. You can tell by the artist Guri Hiru.
Oh, yeah.
Who did
Power Pack.
Power Pack.
A bunch of good Power Pack minis back in the day. They're super talented.
So Nadia's guardian is Edwin Jarvis.
Uh-huh.
And that's pretty great. And this is all about... basically, Nadia having little superpowered drones that her girl genius people use to assist her. She goes and takes out AIM, while Janet Van Dyne, who is sort of her adoptive mother and mentor, is helping her launch GIRL as a science expo. And this is just, it's really good. It's unabashedly about sort of the STEM, you know, science, technology.
Yeah, kind of viewed through a superhero lens.
Yeah. I really, really like the concept. I think Whitley's execution is great. I think the character is a lot of fun. I think anyone who likes Squirrel Girl and Miss Marvel or those kind of characters would love this.
Is she supposed to be a teenager?
She is a teenager.
Okay. Yes.
And I'm hoping that with this new sort of rebrand that people will give it a shot and maybe go back and reread the original series, which I honestly liked better than this first issue, but I liked this first issue quite a bit and would recommend it.
Nice.
Dave?
So, my first issue is straight from the hated Black Panther movie.
Yeah.
Wish
could have been a Creed spinoff.
I do wish it could have been. Maybe she could be in Creed 2. I don't know. We're not done yet. It hasn't come out yet. No, almost everybody who saw Black Panther would agree one of the breakout characters was his sister, Shuri. Basically, she was like the tech and behind the throne, and also the smartassery we needed to keep her brother to knock her brother down a peg and keep him from thinking too much of himself.
Yep.
She needed him to he needed her to give him the finger, as happens early on. So they are doing. Do we know if it's an ongoing or a miniseries?
We don't know.
Okay, it's one of those things. Whatever. It's focused on her with really nice art by someone I don't know named Leonardo Romero. But I can say that his art reminded me of Chris Samnee from that scene in like Mark Waid's Daredevil and Captain America runs recently. So if you kind of liked that style, I feel like you'll be pretty at home here. What's just happened in this is that Wakanda is kind of entering the space race. Now, it might seem that they're kind of coming to this late in the game, but it seems like they've been kind of playing it slow to get things right, and they're kind of going a little bit step further where they're actually, like, their ship is meant to go through, like, a wormhole. So it's pretty big space stuff.
I did think it was weird they were launching their first spaceship now.
Yeah.
Because it feels like they should be guys who have it. But, yeah, once they reveal it was also, like, secretly it was actually, like, quantum travel. I'm like, oh, that makes more sense.
Right. I could see how they would, you know, Mike could have used a line or two where they were like, yes, we could have gotten into it earlier, but we decided to, you know, focus on more internal affairs or whatever and, you know, hold out for whatever reason. But going up in the ship is Black Panther himself, T'Challa, and the guy who's like, it's like, is it her boyfriend, basically, among other things? The other dude who goes up, y'all?
I can't tell.
There is for sure. Yeah, I think that's a guy. It seems like they have been intimate. There's a close up shot of them where they are looking at certainly like more than friends at each other, and she's kind of like, you know, keep an eye on my brother and all that stuff. And what happens is after the ship launches, and she like did all the design work on it, so she's pretty heavily invested in it. Everything goes off seemingly well, but then like 2 weeks later, they haven't returned, and there is kind of this kind of growing fear in the nation that they might have actually gone missing and they don't know what's happened. Meanwhile, we kind of like see her life while she's doing that, where she's designing things. She's got this set of wings that are almost like a teched up version of like Angel or mm-hmm. Hawkman, one
yep.
of those guys.
Yep.
And she kind of like, while she's just thinking, she's trying out gadgets and stuff like this. There's also something that was a little bit weird to me, but clearly based on a recent story, where she's like been to like the Wakandan like afterlife, or is it after? I guess it's sort of like an afterlife.
It's like their it's ancestor, like, yeah.
Where they can commune with their ancestors, and she's like literally, for lack of a better word, somewhat haunted by them. Mm-hmm. Like they are kind of there dispensing advice, sort of whether she wants it or not sometimes,
yep.
and trying to push her, you know, this way or that. But it does work to take a character. This is kind of who's relatively solo and give them some sounding boards. It'd be like, it's like the Jedi, the Ghost Jedi, honestly.
Yeah.
It's like, occasionally you gotta chat it up with Yoda or Obi-Wan and see if your plan sounds smooth.
It's true.
There's also a mysterious hacker she's kind of been chatting with. There's like some revelations kind of about her past and her, you know, her role in Wakanda and being overshadowed by T'Challa. And then lastly, there's a big thing that happens at the end that I don't want to spoil that sort of sets up what's going to be her direction, what she's going to do about this seemingly lost space flight, and also kind of involves some of the other female major players in Wakanda. Anyway, I thought it was a really strong first issue. So I haven't read a ton of Black Panther comics, and Randy, from what you and Nick have told me, she's been Black Panther before
yes.
in the comics,
mm-hmm.
and even been a bad guy person at some point, maybe?
I mean,
she's
been adversarial to Black Panther.
Yeah.
Okay. And they are clearly trying to reconcile that with the movie, because I would say she is like, I'm going to say like 90% the movie character. So in a way, it was like getting to revisit that character again for the what's going to be basically the first time before Black Panther 2. Broadly speaking, it's a little lightweight, I thought. I would have wanted, I think it almost needs a little bit more of a threat in this than just her brother is missing. And so I think they'll probably address something like that as time goes by. I was happy to see these characters again. I super liked the art, and I kind of want to see what they're doing. So I would say if obviously a lot of people like Black Panther, if you like Black Panther and you like that character, I would say this is worth your time to try out the first issue.
What if you liked Creed much better than Black Panther?
Then you're clearly a psychopath, and you can't be trusted on anything.
Yes.
Nick, what you got?
I'm going to not pick a Marvel book, so like both of you. I am actually going to pick an Image book called Exorcisters, number one.
That's like the word exorcist crammed together with sisters.
Yes. And this is actually just a fun little story about two sisters who are sort of exorcist for hire.
Mm-hmm.
And it opens up with a woman getting married and her husband unceremoniously being dragged to hell. And then they get on the case. And
the art from afar looks a little like not quite as cartoony as Archie, but there's something of that too.
Well, and there's good reason for that. I mean, Giselle Lagasse, I don't exactly know how you pronounce it, but she was on Jim and the Holograms for a while.
Okay.
So it's got sort of that quality to it. It's beautiful though, and very
yeah, it's nice
fun
looking.
To look at, easy storytelling. And I don't want to give too much away, but basically these two sisters, Kate and Kate, one spelled with a C and one spelled with a K,
uh-huh.
seem to be sort of polar opposites. One is more kind of metal-looking, and one's sort of bookish in a lot
right,
of ways.
Right, bookish and reserved.
Yeah, and The thing they're trying to solve of why this person was dragged to hell, there's some twists and turns that I think are really smart. There's just kind of this level of humor in this book that is pretty smart. One of the reasons for that is the writer of this, Ian Boothby, was one of the writers on Simpsons and Futurama and a few other things. And it's got that level of kind of humor and gags and... but also smarts, because there is some very smart storytelling in here.
Right, like, what, looking at it, it doesn't look quite as, like, say, slapsticky as, say, no. Futurama or something like that?
No, no, it's not. It just has sort of some of the humor kicks to it.
Okay.
Because, like, there are many portals to hell, and, like, the portal is very tiny, so they have to crawl through it. And there's a butt joke here and there, giant eyeballs... but it's all sort of told with kind of a slickness that I really, really enjoyed. It was very humorous and fun. There's a big twist in the end that I actually kind of makes me want to come back to see what happens next.
What's the twist?
I'm not going to tell you the twist. And you know the twist. You read the twist. it's just a lot of... It's very good. And it was kind of a palate cleanser that I needed because... It was not the best of weeks for me, but this one hit the spot.
Nice.
And my backup pick is a book that I apparently have picked. No, I did not pick the first issue, but Black Badge number 3.
But it's becoming a regular pick for you.
Yeah, it is. I don't know. Again, I don't know why a idea of a sort of special ops Boy Scout troop resonates with me so much.
I think
it's a lot of badass.
A lot of it is about the execution because I could see another writer doing this and it would if not stink, it would just be kind of like, it's okay.
Yeah.
Who's the writer?
Matt Kent. Yeah, Matt Kent's just sort of. He keeps coming up with these great ideas. Mm-hmm. So the second one had the Boy Scout troop being kind of watched and surveyed by a group of Canadians.
Uh-huh.
And this issue sort of picks up with the fallout of that, where they, because they've been deemed to have screwed up, they are sequestered at Camp Wayward, which is sort of their kind of training camp center. And Matt Kent and artist Tyler Jenkins give this, like... fantastic little map of everything that is involved in this.
That's cool.
Everything like crafting center, helicopter landing pad, the armory. It feels very G.I. Joe, their base of operations.
That feeling I had in the first one, do you think it's going to come true, Nick? Do you think feel like a movie or a TV show?
I can only hope, because there are some cool stuff that happens. You get more about the characters... but then they're sort of dealing with a lost member of their troop who they think was killed, but the main leader of the group has found some information that maybe contradicts that. And they go to Pakistan. And it's just interesting. It's got kind of that G.I. Joe style of storytelling.
Right, that globe hopping.
Yeah, the globe hopping. And... Matt Kent is just killing it. I mean, there's just every single issue of this is I'm getting more and more invested. So,
Played Straight. Because I've only read the first two issues, and I couldn't quite tell whether it was going to veer into satire at some point or more satirical.
I think there's elements of satire, but for the most part, it is played sort of like.
Well, in a way, it's almost like they're a microcosm of like. You know, like, whether it was the CIA or the FBI or something like that, where there's morally ambiguous things that they do and that they have to deal with, but it's not like... It's a satire.
Right.
Like, it's like a big, heavy-handed satire.
I think the biggest thing that you have to kind of wrap your head around is that in this world, kids are used as sort of agents, not just, like, Americans, but, you know, there's other members of child sort of forces... And that's kind of bizarre, but it kind of
works.
Kind of
like, you know, Bond always had its thing where all the spies are like probably 20, 30-something sexy spies all apparently sleeping with each other when they're not outwitting each other.
Right.
And this is just like another kind of way to lens a sort of a fictional spy universe.
Exactly. But again, it's just a lot of fun.
Nice.
Dave, what is your backup pick?
I'm going back to Jeff Lemire's Gideon Falls, which I've picked any number of times. This is his kind of suspense, supernatural thriller that has a little bit of David Lynch and I'm trying to think of what else. I feel like Lynch, more than anything on this, because of even a few things that even specifically recall Twin Peaks, but it's not surreal the way Twin Peaks is. It's world is a serious and kind of closer to the real world.
Yeah.
The story, one of the things, I kind of was hesitant to pick this issue up, even though I believe it's the first issue since the... what would be the first six-issue story arc?
Well, the trade hits this week.
Right, so that's issue 1-6, I guess, then. Because I was like, oh, you know, I might have missed an issue in there. I'm not sure if I'm caught up. And I kind of forgot that, like, the same thing I had when I was reading Royal City and I would maybe miss an issue or something like that is, oh, right, he's actually really good at doing a single-issue story that is all part of a bigger story, but will get me caught up and I don't feel, confused or not confused in a bad way. Like,
yeah.
I'm like... oh, okay, right, yeah, this catches me up, and I do not feel thrown. I don't know why he is super good at it. I've seen him do him tons of times now. And here I was like, wait, what's going on? And I felt, like, caught up within just a few pages. The guy who, in the first issue, so for those who don't remember, there's two people that are kind of... there's the city of Gideon Falls, where pastor has set up shop, who's kind of... roams around a bit. He's got his own sort of skeletons in his closet, and there's weird stuff going on with the previous
sent there to sort of replace a priest that has died recently.
Right, but he's like, they were saying he's missing, and then it's like he may have been killed.
Yeah.
And there's some other weird mysteries, I think he was supposed to be dead, but then he sees him, early on.
And then one of the other stories is, like, the guy that is kind of...
he's seeing a psychiatrist, and he's like a paranoid, like, almost like... and something you'd almost think maybe like schizophrenic. He has clear breaks from reality.
But he's like picking up random items. Right.
So the things would be like nails and door hinges and pieces of like a doorknob and stuff like that, because he thinks they belong to this mysterious place thing called the Black Barn, and that it's a thing that really exists and somehow manifests itself around the world in these small forms. So the interesting development that takes place in this one is his psychiatrist, sort of a pretty younger lady who has kind of gotten to the point where she's kind of believing him now. She had some weird experiences, and she's like, I think what you're talking about might be real. And he is actually like joining her, or she is joining him now at this point, and he has this notion that they need to take the things he's finding and begin building the barn. I forget exactly what he wants to, if he thinks like that'll allow him to control it.
I can't foresee that being an issue.
But he does feel like compelled, like he knows that there's like a reason to do it. And there's clearly, I believe for the first time in this one, there's a suggestion of possibly a romance thing in it too. Mm. Like she has a romantic interest in him. And meanwhile, so that's his story. I know it will intersect, but has not yet fully with the priest's story. He spends the issue talking to the town sheriff in Gideon Falls, who we learn more about her past and some of the stuff from her past that might connect up with this. Anyway, each issue is kind of revealing things slowly and kind of like it feels very much like sort of Hitchcock, but also like a little bit more that I'm trying to think of like a supernatural suspense movie. Is there something like that? Something that's more or less the real world, but there's definitely something going on that's a little bit beyond...
Harry Potter.
All right, can I get any serious answers from anybody who can help me out here?
I don't know.
All right. Although this is kind of a slow burn comic, some big stuff does happen in this issue, aside from his psychiatrist kind of like... he's got this project that he starts. We find out some big things about the actual town of Gideon Falls. Some people who come after him and his shrink at the end, they seem to be like clearly, like evil agents essentially, who are, I guess X-Files is honestly maybe the closest to how it's sort of playing out. But if it was like a kind of a long form version of a single X-Files story, so we're overtly seeing like antagonistic bad guys in this one, for the first time, who are like, who's talking about like they need one of the guy who sees all the stuff to become like some sort of gateway or portal or something for them. There's definitely a sense that they might be a cult or something.
Now I have a question.
Yep.
As you're flipping through it, and I can only see bits and pieces of it, is it still Andrew Sorrentino who's doing the artwork?
Yeah.
It feels like it's a little clearer. I mean,
I actually do think the storytelling is has gotten better And some of it's probably I've gotten a little bit used to his quirks, because, you know, if people don't remember, Sorrentino is like a reasonably talented draftsman, but whose storytelling always kind of was a little bit of a headache for me. And I do like this a lot better. The first page is the only kind of weird one, and it's deliberately upside down, as the guy who's seeing the psychiatrist is having his flashback to his childhood, and it's kind of meant to disorient you by making you read it upside down. But beyond that, it's actually pretty clear storytelling. There was no major points where I was, thrown off from panel to panel. And a lot of it, more and more I feel like he may be a good fit for the book. The trade paperback, which also hits this week, if you don't take my word for it, take the word of Mark Miller, who writes every single comic and movie you've ever watched or read.
It's true. He wrote Creed. He wrote Black Panther.
Yes. He calls it his personal pick as the best comic of 2018.
Is this one of the $9.99 trades, too?
It is.
Honestly, I think at this point, LeMire has got the seal of approval on most anything he writes.
This is the rare book that I have not read of LeMire's, and I'm looking forward to checking it out in the trade now. The trade is out.
Yeah. I think it's going to actually be a particularly good read as a trade, and I'm looking forward to picking it up and sort of getting it all in context and seeing what secrets I can discover. Randy, your secondary pick?
Yeah, my backup pick is Peter Parker, Spectacular Spider-Man number 311. Chip Zdarsky finished out his run. So this is a new writer, Sean Ryan, and the artist is Juan Frigieri. And this is a Spider-Geddon tie-in, which is why I picked it up. Basically, Morlun, who is the one of the Inheritors, and JMS is sort of like evil energy vampire.
I was going to say, he's like the main one.
He's come back, and while the other Inheritors are off having a Spidey feast, he's going to go after the one Spider-Man has defeated him like three times, and that is Peter Parker. So this is Peter Parker is off having a day. He's like stopping a bank robbery, and then all of a sudden, Morlun shows up and is chasing him through the city. And Morlun, when he showed up, JMS and I think it was Romita Jr. did a great job making him just like this super dangerous guy. Like,
right. I still remember like how dangerous he felt when he was around.
And Sean Ryan does a great job of selling that. Like, Spidey is making quips and stuff, but he's also like well aware of the danger that he's in. And he calls Jonah Jameson, who now knows who he is thanks to this book, for help. To basically, he's like...
What's he going to do? Write an editorial?
He's on the run from Morlun, and he's like, Jonah, I need you to get this thing, which is like dimensional transport device, and bring it to me so that I can go find the web warriors who can help me deal with this. So this
they have somewhat buried the hatchet, I'm guessing, and JJJ wasn't just like, get it yourself, wall crawler.
No, JJ is like trying to help him. But in his irascible way, he like goes in and won't tell his roommate anything.
So like he's got a crusty buddy now.
So yeah, it's basically crusty buddy. this is a chase series where Spidey is outgunned. Whenever Morlun catches him, he beats the hell out of him.
Yeah.
And so he's basically running away from this guy, trying to get to safety that J. Jonah is doing. There's a good sense of pacing. There's a good sense of the fear that Morlun instills and the danger he presents. It's really good, and I think if you're reading Spider-Geddon, worth a read. Also on my list this week, Black Hammer Age of Doom number 6 with guest art by Rich Tomasso. Very strange Colonel Weird spotlight issue. Flavor number 6 comes to an end of single issues. Skyward number 7, which picks up with giant bugs and stuff.
There's a guy riding a giant moth in the cover.
Butterfly.
Is it a butterfly? Yep. Okay, I misspoke.
This book has been so good. It's got beautiful art by Lee Garbett. It's such a strange concept. This is the one where basically gravity disappeared and gravity doesn't work anymore. And I thought it was like going to be a quick miniseries premise. But no, they're doing an ongoing. And it's got some of the same imagination and scope that Saga has.
Weird.
I'm really digging it. And that was really fun. Captain Ginger is anthropomorphic cats in a space battle. And if you like cats, I think you probably like this book. There's also a two-page prose story by Grant Morrison at the end.
I feel like it's Star Trek cats, sort of.
The Electric Sky Bear that inspired Ben Franklin.
That old story gets resurrected about once a year.
New What If, as always with these What Ifs, it's not actually a What If, because the What If is called What If Marvel Comics Went Metal with Ghost Rider, which is not a What If. At least it's a question.
I kind of like that it's, in a way, like, I will allow them to do that just because the question is, what if a character went metal?
No, I will not allow it.
Which is kind of fun, and I like it.
Nope.
You're about to, like, bring it up as something to recommend.
Exactly.
Or quasi-recommend.
It's not a what-if, but it's a good story.
Okay.
It's a fun goof. It reminds me of, like, Assistant Editor's Month type stuff, where basically Robbie Reyes is working as an intern at Marvel. There's this crazy black metal band that shows up that is a big fan, and they want to mix their blood into the ink. And he gives them a tour of Marvel, turns into a satanic thing, and Ghost Rider has to go into action. It's goofy. It's fun. If you like stuff like Deathlock, you'll probably like it. X-Men Black Mystique. This is a one-shot on Mystique. This is definitely a more sinister version of her, which I actually like her more as a less amoral. But Shauna McGuire writes it. It's pretty good. And it is a it's Mystique being evil and duplicitous. Runaways number 14, which does more with the young Ghiborum, which was a fun concept to bring in the Ghiborum's kids. Just like
I hope that gets
kids.
A spinoff.
Young Ghiborum?
Yeah.
It also has a silent issue backup with that is seen from the point of view of Old Lace, the dinosaur. And finally, Daredevil 609 starts a story called The Death of Daredevil by Charles Soule and Phil Noto. Beautiful painted art. Does not seem about the death of Daredevil so much, but is about Daredevil deciding that he needs to take down the Kingpin as mayor and how he's going to do that. And it was good. Dave, what else is on your list?
The only other thing I wanted to mention was the graphic novel, the very nice Junji Ito manga that came out this week. You know, they've started putting all his stuff in these nice hardcovers, and Junji Ito's the big horror king of manga. And this week is his adaptation of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. I just had time to start reading it, but it seems like it is a pretty faithful adaptation, which is to say it like begins in the Arctic with a ship picking up Dr. Frankenstein wasting away on the ice hunting for the creature, just like the book does. Or I think it's been a little while since I read the book, but I remember all that stuff for sure. And of course he has a particularly ghoulish and hideous way of drawing the monster and a lot of other stuff in it, so it has his trademark disturbing qualities, but it is also faithful to the book and kind of its expanded version of the story that I guess some people that don't know that well, you know, a lot of times the movie kind of became more iconic than the book in some ways. So I think, yeah, a lot of the stuff where like the creature learning to talk, which is like a big thing in the book but is not often in the movies, is in here. And there's also a bonus of six other stories from Junji Ito, so it is a big old heaping helping of horror. Nick, what else?
A few to add. Batman number 57, which finishes out the KGB story by sort of a compare-contrast to the lives of KG Beast and Batman growing from a young boy to now.
Did the KG Beast did a bunch of the KGB agents fly through his window and inspired him to become the KG Beast?
No, it's all about fathers and sons.
Oh,
so okay. It's an interesting look, and also sort of this big ass knockdown dragout fight between the two as Batman finally catches up with his prey.
You know what's weird? The KG Beast is sort of a very Cold War villain. It's interesting to bring him back. I always liked him, but he is a weirdly Cold War villain.
He is, but I guess they still...
He's KG back.
Tom King wanted to show that he is kind of the epitome of assassins. He's one of the best and most feared. It's an interesting take, and I actually have always liked KG Beast, so seeing him kind of brought to the forefront of that is not a bad thing.
If they were doing a Marvel DC crossover again, KG Beast and Winter Soldier would be perfect together.
It's true, it would be.
That'd be the KG best.
Oh god, you puns. Infinity Warp's Weapon Hex, blending Scarlet Witch and Laura Kinney, X-23.
That's weird.
And also, like, Sabretooth and Iliana, and sort of magic and weirdness.
That is some weird dice rolling there.
Yeah, it is. This one doesn't work as well as some of the other ones, but there's a lot of interesting world building in here of sort of the magic side of this Infinity Warps.
All these mashups have mixed magic and technology, now that I think about it, because, like, Iron Hammer and Captain America and Doctor Strange. Those are all... They weirdly mixed in magic with everything.
Yeah. It is a little
strange.
It's kind
of like D&D 5th edition where everyone has magic.
Yep. Thor number 6. Still sticking with the future Thor story. This time they're going... Old Man Thor and Old Man Logan imbued with the Phoenix Force are fighting a Doom that has a billion powers.
Old Man Doom?
Yes, but he's also, like, the Soldier Supreme, and, a bunch of other... He's got, like, I can't remember
what the... What book is this?
This is Thor.
That's weird.
Six. Yeah. And they're fighting on sort of their new Eden that is Earth that Thor has brought back into reality. It's bizarre, but it kind of fits in what Jason Aaron's been doing the entire time. There's a Venom annual featuring stories from Donny Cates, David Michelin, Ron Lim, and James Stokoe. James Stokoe does a Juggernaut story in here, Venom versus Juggernaut, and it's a lot of fun.
Now, as long as James Stokoe's working at Marvel, it's probably about time for that Spider-Man Vietnam story we all want.
They already did their Venom and Vietnam story. They're halfway there.
Yeah.
And they'll put out something actually good.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. I heard it was all right.
And I didn't get a chance to read it, but... Lucifer starts back up with the new number one this week, spinning out in the Sandman universe.
He has a beard now?
Yes, he looks weirdly like Alan Moore on the cover of this one. I'm going to check this out. I just kind of ran out of time, but the artwork by... Why am I blanking? It's Max Famora. That's why it looks beautiful.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he can do no wrong as an artist. And it's just amazing looking. So yes, I'm not familiar with Dan Waters. I don't know exactly what he is, but I'm assuming he's one of Neil Gaiman's friends, and probably a novelist of some sort.
Probably. All of Neil Gaiman's friends are novelists or musicians.
That's true.
Or chaos gods. Or magicians.
I think more magicians and less chaos gods.
Probably. Yeah, probably so. There's probably at least one.
I'm sure there's one that snuck in. So yes, that also launches. But that is all that I have.
All right. So that's it for us. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about some movies and a little bit of TV.
Talking about comics, movies, and fame. They even talk about board games. No week is the same.
All right. So we're going to talk about some movies and some TV shows. And Nick, let's start off. You saw a couple of movies in the theater that are new that people might want to hear about.
Right. I saw A Star is Born and First Man.
And how are the two of them similar?
Both very personal, like, human stories. So
and
I guess
how are they different?
Nick had an answer
one's
for
about
you in
space,
your face, bitch.
And one's about a singer.
About the internal space our mind occupies.
Sure. Yeah. Let's go with what they've said.
Okay, good.
No, but honestly... A Star is Born has been remade several times. I've only seen, I guess, two of the other versions.
How many versions are there?
I think there are four total.
Oh. So you've almost seen all the versions.
Yeah, I've almost seen all the versions.
You should watch the first one.
I haven't seen the original, which I've... but regardless, I know people loved the Barbra Streisand, Kris Kristofferson one. I was not truly enamored with that. I think I watched it because my mom had a love of all things Barbra Streisand.
Okay.
You know, I did not know the baseline concept until I read it in somebody's review.
Yeah, which the concept is basically a kind of older musician, sort of at the peak of his popularity, but slowly dwindling, finds a young woman who can sing, and sort of her
fame eclipses his own.
Yes, and it's they fall in love, and they have to deal with sort of that kind of thing.
Right.
The big one in this is it's Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga.
Cooper directed, right?
Cooper directs. He wrote. He has a writing credit on it as well.
He sings. He's a triple threat.
He is, and I will say, he sings, and it's very, very good. It's on par with Lady Gaga, which is bizarre to me. He kind of has this. Imagine Sam Elliott singing, and that kind of is what it is. Because
doesn't sound good.
A lot of people find Sam Elliott sexy.
I just can't see him singing. I love Sam Elliott.
And Sam Elliott is actually in this as well.
Does he sing?
He does not.
I'm imagining it's like, by the way, it's like hyper auto-tuned where you can hear it and shit.
No, but Bradley Cooper's voice sort of sounds Johnny Cash-ish.
Yeah. Craggy, but it seems like, what I remember, like, maybe from the little bits on the pieces on the trailer, it sounds like he's got some vocal range and some training and stuff like that.
But it's also his descent with alcoholism and sort of drug addiction and sort of suicidal tendencies and things like that. So it definitely delves into some darker stuff, more than I was expecting it to. The Kris Kristofferson, Barbra Streisand, the sort of culmination there's kind of an act of God in a lot of ways, like an accident that occurs. This one is definitely more personal in a lot of ways. And I was surprised at how much it affected me, because, I mean, I'm an emotional guy. I tear up. This one I was very kind of like drawn into the story, mainly because I loved the characters. And I was surprised at how well Lady Gaga could act. Which I guess was we weren't.
I've seen her. Was she on American Horror Story?
She was on American Horror Story, and I didn't watch much of that season because that was the hotel season, and it was about vampires, and it was very like super bloody, super. It just didn't connect.
You're like, my greatest fear is a vampire in a hotel, and so I could not.
As
do
Lady
that,
Gaga obviously. And like Matt Bomer as vampires,
I've. Definitely some singers have made the transition to acting before, so not a giant shock, but no. I didn't know that she had talent.
But I honestly see her being nominated for an Oscar. Actually, I see both of them, but he'll get it for directing, but she'll get nominated for Best Actress.
Most of the folks I know who've seen it have liked it pretty well, I think.
Yeah, I was very happy with it. First Man is interesting. It's Ryan Gosling, Claire Foy, and it's directed, and I can't remember the guy's name, but it's the same guy who did La La Land.
Right.
And it's the story of,
was the musical.
Yes.
Right.
And it's the story of Neil Armstrong. And it's kind of a more personal story about, like, it's not a biography, an autobiography about him as much as
it's about the mission and to him and during his life during the mission, right?
And there's a little bit beforehand of, like, how he gets involved in the space program and sort of his home life. And it's an interesting look because I knew nothing about Neil Armstrong and sort of him having to deal with like a daughter that died when she was, I think, 3 and sort of how that sort of affected him. And he was not a happy guy and how it affected his home life and his relationship with his wife and sort of just how kind of, you know, on the brink that the space program was throughout the whole thing. It's just dangerous, and they were just taking so many risks.
Right, like, we kind of look at it back in the 60s, and it was like everything seems shining and golden, and, you know, you kind of forget
how maybe risky it was. Yeah, and then you get things like Apollo 13, like, the kind of flash and substance. I mean, Ron Howard made a great film, and I love Apollo 13, but it is very flashy. I mean, it...
Do you mean to say because it has, like the threat of they're repairing shit or they die kind of stuff.
Yeah, and this one,
I don't think of it as like a pop kind of glammy movie or something.
No, but it feels larger. It doesn't it doesn't feel as like grounded.
It's not the personal story of a single one of them, it's the story of the mission.
And this one is, you know, dealing with like Apollo mission where the 3 astronauts were killed like on the tarmac, so that's involved. It's sort of all-encompassing of the space program itself. Mm. It's not just one flight.
I heard that it's a terrible anti-American movie because they didn't linger on the American flag on the moon.
Jesus Christ, it's there. Shut the hell up.
That's what I heard. It's like, it's there. It's just like, I think what people wanted was them to focus on it for like about 5 minutes, play the Star Spangled Banner, and fireworks go off.
Play the America Fuck Yeah song from Team America.
Yes. And Neil Diamond's sings his Coming to America song.
So I'm to understand that First Man is not a musical.
It's not a musical.
Oh, okay.
One of the weirdest things about the movie, and it took me a while, actually more than a few minutes to sort of adjust to it, was the perspective of the camera. It is very close to the actors.
Oh, weird.
Like, it is almost like, it's not point of view, but it feels like you're invading their space the entire time.
So they very deliberately, is it like that sort of cinema verite with like handheld cameras?
Yes, it has it, because it kind of jumps a little bit.
Okay.
And it's just more
of a you are there than people probably are expecting.
Exactly. It's more organic quality to it than I was expecting.
That's kind of cool.
And I definitely recommend it, especially if you have any love for the space program or want to know more about that.
I'm sure my brother, who's a big astronomy buff and you know, kind of NASA history kind of buff, I'm sure we'll see it, but I don't know if he's going to see it in the theater or not. But
there's some space shots that I might say it is
would be worth seeing
on the big
screen.
And I have to say that Ryan Gosling is quickly becoming a very talented actor.
Okay.
He's not, like, my favorite, but he's had more than a few hits. I guess I finally need to watch Blade Runner.
No, you should watch Blade Runner. It didn't quite connect with me, but it was interesting enough that I want to revisit it at some point and see what I think on a second pass.
But I feel like Ryan Gosling has more range than I gave him credit for.
He's also good than Nice Guys.
He's great. He has that sort of comedic bent, but
he doesn't like cereal.
No, he does not. But he.
That thing?
Yeah. You don't get Ryan Gosling want to eat his cereal? Nothing.
Oh yeah. It's a meme, y'all.
It's a meme.
Yeah. But you know, he's got comedy. He's got sort of drama. I guess he's always been like the pretty boy guy. Just kind of.
Yeah.
Just like the guy in the previous movie we reviewed.
Yes, Bradley Cooper.
Yeah, Bradley Cooper.
Although I've always liked Bradley Cooper, he is just always likable for me, even though he plays a lot of jackasses.
So I want to talk about a couple older movies, because I'm doing my horror movie watch-a-thon, which has stalled out thanks to the Overwatch Halloween thing and Haunting of Hill House, which we'll also talk about. But I did watch a couple more. I watched finally watched Train to Busan, the Korean zombie movie, which I've been to watch forever.
Like Zombies on a Train.
Yep. And it's really, really good. Like, it rose to in my estimation to one of my favorite zombie movies.
So good that they're going to make an American remake.
Well, supposedly. And it's James Wan's one of the producers. So, yeah. But
there
we'll
have
see.
Been good American remakes. Sure. I feel like they'd have to, like, kind of change it up. Were we talking about this, Randy?
Yep.
Where it's just like, the trains don't work the way in America that they do in Korea.
Well, yeah. Having seen this, there's no reason to remake this. Because this is a damn near perfect zombie movie. Like, I like all the characters they've got. It definitely hits on the zombie tropes of, like, the humans turning on one another.
Right.
But there's zombies. Like, they definitely got some people with some, like, I don't know if it was, like, mime training or what, but they have that herky-jerky motion.
Right, they kind of, like, have that Silent Hill spastic twitch kind of thing.
I was gonna say, these fast-moving zombies?
Yes, they're fast-moving zombies. They're creepy. They have, their senses are, like, when it's dark, they sort of go, they can't see as well.
It's almost like they go dormant or sort of.
Yeah.
So there's a super intense scene that everybody who sees it is going to remember, where they have to, like, the people have to cross from one car to the next, and they have to go through a zombie-filled car.
It's full of zombies.
And they're like, when we're going through the tunnel, we'll have a narrow window of opportunity where we can, like, crawl on the floor or crawl in the luggage racks up above and try and make it past them.
Ugh. Yeah.
And it's really intense.
It's very
intense. Sounds like that scene in The Stand where they're crawling through the Lincoln Tunnel.
Yeah. It's like it's a much more focused version, it's got that kind of claustrophobic, any move could, something could go horrible.
And it's clear to me, one of the leads, I think, must be like a Korean action star, because he's like a big karate kicking dude, and he's awesome.
Yeah, he's like he's not the lead character,
no.
But he's kind of like the hard-ass, cool dad guy. Yeah. Yeah. Dad-to-be. Yeah.
This is on Netflix?
It's on Netflix.
Okay. And I need to sit down and watch this. I have not yet.
Also on Netflix, a movie called The Void, which, Dave, did you watch The Void?
I have not seen The Void.
So you've watched The Void. So The Void, I feel like it's a flawed, well-meaning failure.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like they're trying to blend sort of like John Carpenter plus a little bit like Phantasm.
Yeah.
It's got this sort of weird Cthulhoid thing a little bit. There's like this
kind of
hospital.
Body horror.
Yeah, body horror. It's a little Cronenberg in there, too. It feels like there's this hospital that has these cultists that have, like, basically trapped these people in it. And then it turns out that there is a little bit more, like, culty stuff going inside the hospital. And the whole thing is perpetrated by someone, and I thought the characters were not really well developed, unfortunately.
Yeah,
I think at the end it didn't make a whole lot of sense.
No, it was a flawed but interesting experiment.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would ever revisit it.
Yeah, you like gross body horror, though, probably worth a look.
Some of the effects are fun.
Yeah, yeah. We also want to talk about Star Wars Resistance.
Yep.
Which you and I watched I watched the first three.
I mean, I think I watched the first two, I think, and then I kind of was... I mean, I'm going to be blunt. I was not that into it.
Yeah?
I felt that it just wasn't kind of what I wanted.
Me too. I think it's set in the Resistance era. Poe Dameron basically recruits this kid who's a talented pilot to go to this floating platform, an actual floating in the water platform on this planet... to look for First Order, the First Order might have infiltrated this thing, and this is a place where they do, like, starship racing or airship racing.
Yeah, it's like...
It's weird because it feels so small.
Yeah.
Like, it's interesting, but, like, the characters are not... The cast is not that well developed, but seriously, because Dave Filoni did it, and he's the guy who did Clone Wars and Rebels. He can clearly build an ensemble.
I mean, I kind of felt bad when I deleted it from my DVR without watching the next episode and sort of unsubscribed to it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure 6 episodes down, it'll be revealed that Phasma is going to be a big part of it.
Well,
and
Phasma is a part of it.
Yeah.
Phasma's the big bad. They've got this, like, Red Baron First Order who's working for her. But... Yeah, for whatever reason, it's just not working. I don't know if it's because there's not as much interest. Like, the First Order era is not as developed.
Yeah.
But I remember after Force Awakens came out, I was like, oh, I want to see more of this era of Star Wars. And it turns out maybe I don't.
Yeah, it's possible.
I told y'all it was going to suck.
Yeah, anyway.
This is a rare opportunity where you're right.
But that said, I want to say, like, all of us came in kind of late to the game on Clone Wars.
Yeah, I gave Clone Wars a try and hated it.
And I think had seen a little bit, some bits and pieces that hadn't, like, maybe impressed us much.
Well, that opening movie was kind of a very
If you know what's going on, or, like, where it's going to go, the movie isn't terrible. You know, right. Like, the characters are solid, and there's some cool action and stuff like that, with a few, some wincy stuff with the little baby Jabba the Hutt dude.
Uh-huh.
But you kind of have to know where it's headed to kind of appreciate it. I wonder if this will hit any of that, you know, where it's like you were saying, in a few episodes, in six episodes or something like that, things will kind of reveal that will kind of
it's
open it up.
It's just weird, though, because Rebels had me on episode one.
Yeah, me too.
It was just interesting. It was that band of characters. It was just sort of them bouncing off of each other, and it made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And this one, their characters are kind of scattered, and I didn't really care for any of them.
I don't love any of them. And yeah, that's where I was, too. I kind of assumed that Clone Wars was... The problem was it was new, and they were getting their feet under them.
Yeah.
And then now they had it, because they did Rebels. And they go back to this Resistance, and I'm like, oh, maybe it was. Maybe Rebels was the fluke.
Yeah, it's possible.
But we'll see. Also, there's no Greg Weisman, and I think that's got to hurt any show, because Greg Weisman was part of Rebels, and
yeah. He's
done all the best animation that has been done, basically.
I also didn't... I mean, I hate to beat it up a little bit, but I didn't think the voice casting was very good
either.
Voice casting's
not great either. Yeah.
Is it possible that, like, in the first two episodes of Discovery, these characters are going to mostly get killed, and then you'll get to the main story
of the
mean,
show? If episode six comes along and Captain Phasma shows up and murders all of them, I mean... Weird for a kid's show, but I'm down for it.
I guess it's possible, but Star Trek Discovery, I liked at the outset in this. Yeah,
yeah.
I was really disappointed in this, because I was expecting it to be on the level of Rebels, or at least on the level of Clone Wars, and it's nowhere near either one.
No.
Do y'all know anybody who's liking it?
No.
No.
Okay.
But I don't know a lot of people who are watching it, to be fair. So.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to do a spoiler warning for Haunting of Hill House. I have seen 5 episodes. Nick's seen the whole thing because he's a crazy person.
Yes.
Dave is going to step out since he's not seen any of it. I don't want to spoil it. So if you have not watched Haunting of Hill House on Netflix, stop now. Yo, Joe. See you next week. Otherwise, stick around. We're going to talk about Haunting of Hill House. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Haunting of Hill House.
Yes.
Now, this is based on a Shirley Jackson story.
It is.
Have you ever read it?
I have not.
I have not either. And I love The Lottery. I should probably read the original story at some point.
Yeah, I feel like well-loved story.
They've made 2 movies? Or is it 3?
I feel like 2 or 3. Because okay. They did The Haunting, which was sort of... And then... Is House on Haunted Hill? Is that...
I'm not... I don't know. I don't think these are all the same movie.
Maybe not. Possibly not.
Anyway.
Regardless.
Haunting of Hill House is a... In Netflix is a story about a family in sort of the mid-80s.
Yep.
They are... the husband and wife. The wife's like an architect. The husband is a... Real estate guy, or
yeah, what they basically do is they come in, they buy houses, and then they flip them.
Yeah, they fix them up, but while they're fixing them up, it's like this isn't like a weekend project. Like,
no, this is a they plan to stay in the homes that they for a few months.
So
this one is
a
like
while.
A summer project,
right? So they're there with their kids. They have 3 daughters and 2 sons.
Yep.
One of the daughters and sons is a pair of twins.
Yes.
And they are fixing up this old fancy mansion.
Yep.
With this big spiral staircase going up that is a great set piece.
Yeah, I guess it's like an actual hotel, I think, in England or something. But regardless, it is this fanciful, just ginormous home that looks eerie and creepy. And
it turns out, spoilers, it's haunted.
Yes.
And so that's one aspect of the story. But the other aspect is the story jumps forward and we're seeing...
Present day.
The present day... When the mom has died,
yes.
Presumably, and like this big event that we get seen it hinted at in the first episode and sort of fully explored as they go on.
Yeah.
And the kids have grown up kind of all screwed up in different ways by all of this.
Yeah, they've all been affected by their time in the house, and it's sort of carried with them.
Yeah, so we see these stories, and it reminds me, Nick, you mentioned This Is Us. And it's not unlike that. It reminds me a little bit of not Dead Like Me, but 6 Feet Under.
6 Feet Under.
So it's sort of like this somewhat dysfunctional family that has been affected by this thing. What this thing has affected them is hauntings, and it's still haunting them today. So one of the girls is, or one of the women, like runs a funeral parlor.
Yeah.
One of them is a like a psychiatrist,
a child psychologist.
One of them
is a junkie.
Is a junkie. And one of them is a book, is an author who wrote a book about the Haunting of Hill House, which has put him, has made him estranged from his entire family because they feel like he basically...
Well, he's the one of the family that doesn't believe in ghosts.
Yeah.
He basically is taking all these stories and stories of other people and sort of warped them and basically turned it into a cash cow.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
he's rich and he's living off of it and they, the rest of the family feels like they have taken for granted and they yeah. hate him for it.
And as we go on, like... Several each episode will sort of focus on one character to yeah. some extent, and we'll see a little bit more. But we start to see like how their lives affected. We start to see maybe that there's that one of them is psychic,
yep.
and that the mother was psychic, and that might have been what drew the ghosts to them in some ways.
Yeah,
we see some of the horrific things that affected them when they were kids. Their ghost effects are creepy and effective. Like yeah. I've not been this spooked out by anything since like Sixth Sense.
Yeah, and. It's one of those things where you need to pay attention to the entire surroundings.
Mm-hmm.
My wife is actually better at it than I am.
Yeah.
And she would see things and point them out, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Because everything in the background, there's so much. Like,
yeah.
statues move, statues turn, there's yeah. ghosts randomly. So, yeah, they are very aware of what they're doing, and they utilize it extremely well.
Yeah, it's really scary. It's really good. Like, the yeah. character work is excellent.
And I think that's sort of what I want out of my horror yeah. is good characters.
Same. I'm not a huge horror fan in general. I need a story that goes with it. And this is actually one of my favorite TV shows I've watched this year. This is so well done. The cast is great.
The cast is great. And it's not like that they're like A-list actors.
No.
Because to me, they're not. They're just really, really good. I mean, yeah. you got Carla Gugino, who's actually worked with what is the director's name?
I don't remember.
Alex Kavanagh, and he was the one who directed Gerald's Game.
Oh, okay.
And so they're working together again. Henry Thomas plays the young version of the dad, who you know from Elliot from E.T.
Uh-huh.
And I like his sort of dynamic with all the kids. He's sort of the glue that's holding the family together in a lot mm-hmm. of ways, sometimes forcefully, so.
Yeah.
And then all the other characters, you were probably like, oh, I recognize them from that.
Yeah.
My wife was like, oh, that's from her, she's from Twilight, and things like that.
Right.
So they're just kind of killing it with the portrayals of these characters.
One of the things I think I really liked is that the ghosts follow them not just at night.
Yeah.
Like, they encounter these ghosts in the daytime, because there's a little bit of that... They wake up out of a dream and they were just seeing a ghost, or they something like they see it and all of a sudden it's gone. Like, there's this notion they're haunted all the time.
Yeah.
And that makes it even scarier.
Yeah.
Like, when it's just in a haunted house, it's easier to be less scared. You're like, okay, well, leave the house. What are you doing?
Yes.
But then when they leave the house and it sort of follows them and it sort of attached itself to them,
yeah.
it's much more effective and much more scary.
Yeah, the ghost that is sort of haunting the character Nell.
Yeah.
The crooked neck lady.
Yeah.
Is just this creepy visual that...
yeah. And there's a big reveal on that at episode 5 that I just finished that was really, really good.
Yep.
The sort of... the guy in the hat who's haunting Luke...
Yep.
Was really scary. Carla Gugino does a great job here of becoming... She's like... Somehow... And I don't know how because I haven't gotten all the way to the end. But somehow she becomes like this ghost. Or she becomes this
yeah.
big threat. And we're seeing her as like their mom... But I know that she's going to be sinister, and it's interesting to watch her play that. So.
Well, I mean, this is one of those stories that plays with time in such a unique way that I mean, we've seen it before,
yeah.
but it's done so well that it kind of takes on a new life.
Yeah.
And especially attributed to sort of a horror genre. I don't know if we've seen that kind of thing mixed with horror.
Right.
And it just, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's really, really good. Everybody should be watching it. They drop at the perfect time. It's Halloween time.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, this is a perfect time for horror stories, and I don't think any of the streaming services are dropping the ball because they all have something rolling
yeah.
out. That
yeah.
I mean, Netflix is killing it with this, but also you have Sabrina next week.
Right.
And,
well, on their spooky cooking show, which I've heard is good.
Yeah, and then what? Hulu's got their...
Hulu had the body, which is the first Into the Dark, that's
yeah.
the Blumhouse thing.
And I feel like there's a couple of other things happening, too.
Yeah.
So it's a good time.
There
if
is
you like
yeah,
the
yeah. Hulu has something called Light as a Feather, which is a sort of a horror series.
Oh, right.
As well.
You know, off the craft
yeah.
thing, if I'm
and
not.
There's something else too. There's like a bunch of different horror streaming stuff.
And then
yeah.
Charmed started back up
yep,
if
yep.
you have any love for that property.
Yep.
So yeah, tons of stuff.
Yeah. Alright, that is it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
yo Joe.
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.